Hey there, this is the History of Gaming podcast, and I'm Zach Natto. This podcast is a way to help shine a light on a popular video game franchise. I'm going to find out exactly how these games are made, and look into things like what went right and what went wrong. And later on, I'll sit down with a friend of mine who's passionate about this franchise, and they're going to tell you firsthand from a fan's perspective of what makes this game so great. So for the first episode, I wanted to feature a game that's near and dear to my heart, Pokemon. Developed by Game Freak Studios, it's a series where you travel the world battling, catching, and training monsters called Pokemon, assembling your perfect team of six to defeat the game's final boss, the Pokemon Champion. With each Pokemon having four attacks and a plethora of potions and Pokeballs to help catch them. Oh, and don't ask me how Pokemon live inside the Pokeballs. Nobody has the answer to that. Not only do you have to beat the champion, but your other task is to catch all the Pokemon in the game. Now, overall, there's 122 games in this franchise and 932 Pokemon total, so get to work. With all those games and Pokemon out there, they've sold over 368 million copies worldwide. And no matter which way you say it, Pokemon, it just gives me a huge sense of nostalgia, bringing me back to the feeling of running around outside, exploring the world around me, and collecting cool stuff. And at its core, exploring and collecting is exactly what the game was based off of. The story of Pokemon and how it was created begins on August 28th, 1965, when Satoshi Tajiri was born. Satoshi grew up in Machida, Tokyo, which was a rural community at the time. His childhood was simple. Dad sold cars, and his mom took care of him and his younger sister. Even as a kid, Satoshi was curious, exploring the forests around where he lived. He was popular in school because he collected so many bugs from the woods, his friends called him the Bug Professor. This hobby eventually faded, though. As Japan became a more modernized country, the forest around his neighborhood slowly went away. So, how did Satoshi fill the void? Well, he did what every kid was doing. Going to the arcade. He went there so much, he got a new nickname. The Storm of the Arcade. Obsessed with getting high scores and figuring out how the arcade machines worked, Satoshi took his skills to the next level and started to develop video games of his own, winning game development competitions, and earning himself quite a bit of cash. All of this was before he was even finished high school. In his spare time, he would make handwritten guides with tips and strategies to all the games he had mastered, selling 10,000 copies of an issue at one point. Not bad for a handwritten and stapled book. Satoshi eventually turned this fan-made guide into a video game development company, and he called it Game Freak. Sound familiar? Well, it should, because it's the company that would, with the help of Nintendo, develop the game Pokemon. The game took 6 years to make, mostly because Satoshi had to fund the project and pay for his employees himself, while also developing games for Nintendo. Pokemon Red and Green were the first to be released in Japan for the Nintendo Game Boy on November 27th, 1996. Now, these games came pretty late into the Game Boy's tenure, so at the time it was still up in the air on whether or not it would be a success. But yeah, of course it was a huge success. Months went by and the game was still selling consistently, eventually pushing Satoshi to collaborate with a manga company to write a comic adaptation of the game. Then the trading card game came out. 142 card sets between North America and Japan, totaling over 16,000 cards. Then the anime came out. 24 seasons and 24 movies later, the show is still going on with seemingly no end in sight. But perhaps the weirdest record Pokemon owns has to do with an episode of the anime. It had flashing lights which caused seizures to some kids watching, and has the Guinness Book World Record for most photosensitive epileptic seizures caused by a TV show. Pokemon is the second highest best-selling video game franchise of all time, second only to Mario, amassing a total of $95 billion across the games. And it's the highest grossing multimedia franchise in history, beating Hello Kitty, Winnie the Pooh, Mickey Mouse, and Star Wars. So now that we're on the same page about what Pokemon is and just how successful it's become, I wanted to capture what it's like from a fan's perspective of what a series about monsters fighting each other means to them and the impact it can have on people. And I think I found just the right person to talk to. No, it's not Detective Pikachu, it's someone better. Joining me now is Alyssa Coleman. She's my friend and a diehard Pokemon fan. She's got so much to talk about, and I can't wait to start picking her brain. How are you doing, Alyssa?
I'm good. How are you, Zach?
Perfect. So Pokemon as a franchise has been around for many, many years, and it's creates a special feeling for everybody. What makes Pokemon so special to you?
Initially, it was just something that was always a constant for me. I've been pretty much watching it since it came out. So I was born in 95, and it came out in 97, and I've been watching it and collecting stuff since then. But at this point in my life, what's making it special now is being able to share it with my brother. Him being 6 and me being almost 26, there's a huge gap there, so it's nice to have little bridges between the commonalities and stuff like that.
That's awesome. Why do you think something that seems like on the surface so simple, catching monsters, training them to fight other monsters, why do you think it's become such a huge success?
Its availability to everyone is so large compared to other stuff. You don't see a whole lot of like other Digimon trading cards. There's very few games for those series. Yu-Gi-Oh! Has it, but even then, it doesn't translate well into other games or stuff like that. Pokemon has the comic books, it has the cards, the games, the plushies. Their whole motto is gotta catch 'em all, and it's just sort of that that builds on itself. So it outlasts and it grows and it's for everyone.
Do you think maybe just the variety of how many different Pokemon there are, like, do you think the cuteness factor maybe has a edge to it in attracting new people?
100%. As far as it goes, I know a lot of people rank their favorite Pokemons based on cuteness. In the games, there's whole, like, the beauty trainers, where their whole stick is just, oh, I gotta have this cute Pokemon, and that's my whole thing. There's the breeders and the hikers, and they all have their specific types, and I think that translates straight to the real life players. They're very much, oh, I'm a this type person or this type person. Some people go straight for these Pokemon have the strongest moves, so those are the ones I go for.
What can you say about the community of Pokemon fans?
I mean, like any community, there's people that don't care what you do in it. They're here just for the fun. They appreciate it. And there's always those people that are there for just to be mean, I guess, just to hate on other people because they don't like the generation that other people tend to go for. Or it's like with the Marvel movies, you always get that one person's like, this is garbage, it's not what it's supposed to be, stuff like that. So it's a hit or miss. Bit of a tangent here, but what's been happening with my job is we've had to limit card sales to people because now they're scalping.
Can you go a little bit into that, please?
Yes, I can.
Because I've heard a little bit about it, and I think it's pretty fascinating.
So basically, there's been a couple of Elite Trainer boxes or cards in the newer released generation of cards that are worth quite a bit of dollars. So you always get your collectors coming in. They'll try and pre-order some if we have them available. And they'll get that $200 card, and it'll be the holy grail to them, and they'll be amazing. Some might sell it and keep the rest just so that they can keep buying other cards. Some will keep it because it's a rarity in itself. And then, between that, the PS5s, Xboxes, with the pandemic right now, people are trying to take advantage of that. They know collectors will pay big bucks to try and get a chance to get those collectible cards, and they're taking that money straight up. It might cost $80 for an elite box, I think, and they'll charge, I think the card is worth $200, so they'll charge upwards of $300-$500 just for the whole box, so you get a chance to get that $200 card.
See, I find it so interesting that something so innocent, like, it starts out as like a kid's game, and it's now almost turned into gambling, like $80 for a card box just for a chance to get that $200 card. It's interesting to me. Maybe it's the simplicity, you know, like Bakugan and Beyblade, there's a ton of plastic to buy and stuff like that. You gotta buy all these things to play the game. And Yu-Gi-Oh, the rules can get a little bit complicated, but with Pokemon, you got four choices, four moves to make, you know? It's a pretty simple game. So I think that's what makes it so appealing to so many people. A couple summers ago, the world was introduced to Pokemon Go. Can you explain what that feeling was like being outside and seeing so many people, like, happy, you know?
100%. I hummed and hawed over it, and I definitely downloaded it early when I shouldn't have, but I had to do it. I donned my ash hat. I had a jean vest at the time. I dressed straight up and I went outside. And it was great talking to people that also were interested in Pokemon that I might not have met otherwise. A community feel on Community Day when everyone went to downtown Ottawa to hit all those stops and those gyms all at once. Catching shinies and trading. It was a very different experience to the games, where if you knew someone that played it, you would trade with them, but you wouldn't really seek out strangers. The card game being a bit different, they have tournaments, stuff like that, you could find other people that way. But for a younger crowd, or an older crowd now that doesn't have the time to do that, it was great to take a couple hours out of your day and see all these people and make new friends, and you could add them on the app. It was a great feeling. It was great. You could go out with your friends that you did have that you might not have known played Pokemon and just hang out and have a good time in the sun.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Alyssa. It's been great having you. I'm sure a lot of people know a lot more about Pokemon than they did before this episode. So do you have anything to say going forward, leaving them?
Honestly, just have fun with Pokemon. Don't make it about anything other than enjoying yourself and sharing it with other people. That's really what it's about, and that's what should be enjoyed with it. Thanks for having me, Zach.
Huge thank you to Alyssa for joining me on the show. I hope you've enjoyed the first episode of the new History of Gaming podcast. Get out there and catch them all, and catch all the episodes coming soon. From the History of Gaming podcast, I'm Zach Natto.